Several months ago, the worship committee was looking for ideas for services that they could create from within the congregation. In the coming month of April is National Poetry Month. And this led the committee to a conversation about a theme for this service. They landed on the idea of what moves you. And the original thought was to collect poetry contributions from several members. It turns out, when asked this question, our contributors responded with some beautiful and deeply reflective prose and music and a wee bit of poetry. Today, we're going to hear from Dion, Mabel, Jeff, Paul, and MA about what moves them. Following their offerings, we'll hear a musical interlude from Ellen, inspired by what she hears. And while you listen to these words from our members, I invite you each to consider what moves you in the spirit or in the flesh. And with that, I invite Dion to step forward and introduce her contribution.
Okay. When I was in high school and college, I used to play the guitar and I wrote songs. And when I was in college, I was an activist with the anti-nuclear movement, the Alliance for Survival that was. I wrote the song you're going to hear at the end of that period when I was transitioning into a job and graduate school, and just life started changing for me. And I didn't for decades come back to it. I recently pulled it out and looked at some of my old music, and this one did definitely still move me. So I recorded it. And you'll hear the recording, my first attempt at recording it. I was going to re-record it with a better tune on the guitar and losing my little photo bomber friend here. But I didn't get to re-recording it. So what you have is what it is. Go ahead, Jolanda.
Sometimes I listen to our songs and to our dreams as the banners of our movements go before. We sing of love and justice, and we dream about the day when there will never be another war. Put away our weapons, disarm the atom bomb, or you know it won't be long before they're used. If no one wants to listen, will we get ourselves in jail? Maybe get a minute on the news. Sometimes I listen to the children as they play. I can't stand to think they're just the same. But I listen to them fighting, and I listen as they die in the games they're making. And the world they're faking is the world they must live in someday. And And I wonder why I try if they're going to fight and die anyway. Sometimes I wonder if I ever believe, and if I did, why can't I now? But sometimes I wonder if I will ever live to see the world I look for, the world I work for, the world I still dream of sometimes.
Thank you so much, Dion, for sharing that with us. At this time, I call on Mabel to please step forward and share what moves you.
Am I finally unlocked?
Just hit it. Once. No, you shouldn't do that.
I had help from my son just now, because I clicked too many times. So I have two poems and these are not brand new, and then one little prose. And this one is called Reverie, or Powell Butte Reverie. The air hangs heavy as I climb the trail under a deep blue sky. No bird songs, no children's voices. I hear only the crunching of pea gravel under my dusty boots and a chorus of companionable crickets chirping endlessly somewhere in the tall, dry grass. Here and there at the trail's edge, I spy startling blue chicory in bloom, a match for my daughter's eyes. Continuing upward, I pass the swale where a large flock of killdeer years ago delighted me with their foraging, a large flock in spring's green grass. Thick clusters of bright goldenrod remind me how my father carefully guided his long-handled scythe around such compelling color. Like the mower in Robert Frost's poem, A Tuft of Flowers, I wonder if my two granddaughters remember our hike to the top of the hill to visit the old orchard, how their small bare feet captured stickers from the tangle of blackberry vines under the trees, and how they cried, yet were willing to fill small buckets with berries despite their painful toes. Only a few weeks ago, the pervasive presence claiming these gentle slopes was a vast blanketing of fragrant blue Canadian thistles blooming everywhere. Now, in September, the tall, dry, crackling plants stand and wait for a breeze in this quiet afternoon. Only then will they lose their gossamer-like thistledown and release their seeds as progeny to populate the landscape. Lightheartedly, yet reluctantly, I descend the hill as crickets sing their farewell song. Now that's several years ago. Now my second one is also several years ago. It's called The Blue Heron. I apologize that some have heard this in our poetry group that we used to have, and I hope we have again in our congregation. As I walk the dike road above the river, the gentle lapping of the water soothes and quiets my weary spirit. Cottonwoods, spring green, line the bank, their light honey fragrance perfuming the morning air. Yellow butterflies and goldfinches weave in and out before me on my path. such bright bangles swinging in the sunlight. High up against a clear blue sky, birdhouses perch atop tall, thin poles. I listen to the purple martins' bubbly talk, envy their sweet occupation as they busily build their nests. I stroll on toward the pond ahead, but there in the meadow, a post with a hint of pale blue seems to shift in the tall grass. Cautiously, I move closer. It's a great blue heron. I revel in his beauty and proud stance. Unmoving, we stare at each other. I wonder what he is thinking. Does he wonder what I am thinking too? If we could exchange our thoughts, what language should we use? I wonder, maybe in a future life, I will be the heron. Maybe in his future life, the heron will be me. Maybe, I wonder. Then my last one is not a poem, it's a prose. To Helena, or Helena, my mother's namesake. So she is my little niece that was born 16 years ago. And I was asked to write something about my mother because she is a namesake. One day when I was in second, this is all true. One day when I was in second grade in spinning school in Puyallup, Washington, I caught my classmate stealing one of the powdered sugar donuts from my lunch pail. Mom had made donuts the day before. I was shocked and outraged at the little girl with powdered sugar all over her guilty face. I'm sure I gave her a piece of my mind. However, I was too shy to tell the teacher about the crime and the theft. After school that day, I raced for home through residential area and finally down the narrow road of the raspberry farm to the berry picker's cabin where we lived that year. All the way home, I was thinking that Mom would do something important about the crime. I rushed in the door roaring, "A girl stole one of my donuts right out of my lunch." Mom listened patiently to my tirade and then to my surprise and chagrin, sort of smiled and said matter-of-factly, "Well, I'll put an extra donut in your lunch for her tomorrow." I was miffed. I had expected some retribution be demanded from this girl thief. What I really got was a lesson in wisdom and compassion by your great grandmother. The next day, I gave my classmate the extra powdered donut and promised that Mom would always send an extra one for her whenever she made donuts. We walked partway home from school together many afternoons. I think she was the same girl who showed me my first banana apple. Thank you. Pardon?
Thank you, Mabel, for sharing. At this time, we'll have Jeff Showell please step forward.
Well, when I was first asked to contribute to today's service, I was a little bit of at a loss as to what I would say. I'm a pretty even person. I don't have a lot of significant highs and lows. And landing on what moves me seemed like it might be a little bit of a challenge. I think most of us, or many of us anyway, when reflecting on the question of what moves us, place ourselves in the realm of private experience, recognizing some quiet, especially poignant moment, like when a child or a parent has crossed a threshold. But I found myself pulled in a different direction. I thought of the power public ritual can have to move us and inspire us. I spent most of the 1980s living in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. And for some of that time, I worked in downtown Washington. I remember seeing some of the preparation for President-elect George Herbert Walker Bush's inauguration. And since it's a public holiday in D.C., I went downtown on Inauguration Day to stand 10 deep in the crowd along the parade route. I even caught the briefest glimpse of President Bush as he walked along the parade route. Later, living in Portland, my wife and I purchased our first digital TV, now known as the Obama TV, so that we could watch Barack Obama's inauguration. Later, we bought a Biden TV. Because I was working at home on the day of President Biden's inauguration, I was able to watch the television coverage. The nation had, weeks earlier, experienced the dual traumas of false claims of stolen election and the January 6th insurrection, both of which had been preceded by a presidency seemingly designed to elevate some of the worst our nation has to offer. I, as many others in this country, was more than ready to turn the page and start afresh. And then, on the TV screen, there she was, Amanda Gorman, the poet, chosen to read the inaugural poem. Who is this? Who is this young Black woman, this beautiful, youthful, smiling, brilliant Black woman, 22 years old, poet laureate of Los Angeles, first national youth poet laureate, Harvard graduate, unmissable bright yellow coat. Clearly a force to be reckoned with, her presence could hardly have offered a more emphatic announcement that our political landscape was about to be transformed. The nation, transfixed by her poise and grace, by her magnetic presence, awaited her recitation. As her thrilling poem, The Hill We Climb, unfolded stanza by stanza, Gorman underlined the fragility of our current moment and of our democracy, and stanza by stanza, she urged hope, resilience, and justice. Quote, somehow we weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished, end quote. Ms. Gorman hit all the right notes, not skipping over the trauma of the outgoing presidency, acknowledging the uncertainty hovering over the inaugural moment, but also offering us a vision of a better nation, if we want it. Hers was a moving and inspiring performance that offered a new tone for a new era. The ability of public ceremony, like an inauguration or swearing-in ceremonies for new citizens, which are also really wonderful. The ability to move us comes not from the spectacle, but from our bearing witness. We locate our place along the nation's historical arc. We tap into our hope that we can uphold the value of justice, both expressed and implied in our nation's founding documents, and that we can welcome everyone within the circle of community without rancor or judgment. Public rituals are, by design, intended to move us, and it's fine to be open to the possibility of being moved by them.
Thank you, Jeff. What a lovely memory. Shared by many here, I'm sure. We will now hear from Paul Henderlau. Would you please step forward, Paul?
Good morning, yes. Hi, all. I am Paul Henderlau. As with Jeff, I was a bit at a loss when the Worship Committee approached me, but I thought, well, what can I do here? So a quick note, I started attending YEAST in 97. Many of you know my wife, Linda Jo, and our daughter, Alana, who grew up in this church. Alana was the Zoom wizard for us at the start of COVID. She got us launched, and now she is launched in college. With that, I am at a cusp in my own life. Though I'm still a parent, I'm no longer actively parenting. Similarly, my career, that life arc has ended. What moves me? What is fulfilling? Or another level, what is my life enthusiasm or enthusiasms? Music. Well, music is a part of my life. Starting with the guitar in high school and the band, later the violin and viola playing in a community orchestra. Also playing mandolin and oud, traveling to Greece and Turkey, exploring international folk music. Folk music and dance. Dance, another enthusiasm. Linda Jo and I met at a waltz. We love swing dancing, we love tango. We even taught dance at Alana's middle school to her peers. Swing dancing at Norse Hall was a family fun we shared and alas, cut short by COVID. I hope someday we can get back there. But back to music. I would often write Linda Jo's small waltzes as anniversary presents. What I found was great creative satisfaction in writing the music as much as the music itself. If I had a bucket list, I might put write a string quartet on it. My younger brother, a decade younger than me, he does have a bucket list. One thing on his list was hiking Pikes Peak. I joined him on this last summer for a 2-day trek. Time away from the city, pausing along the trail, looking back at the expanse we've traveled, then rounding a bend to see what lies ahead of us. All this is feeding a deep hunger within me, a great change of pace for my technology career. Of course, this is also but a metaphor for my own existential reflections. Again, I am at a life cusp. Pausing, I can look back, see the expansive years that I've traveled, as well as looking ahead in curiosity. But as I look back, a generation ago, when I lived in the Bay Area, we lost a longtime family friend. We lost him to AIDS. Soon thereafter, cancer came into my world, taking away a love. A generation ago, these were significant losses for me. These were a major wake-up call. Many of you know Mary Oliver and her works. Her poem, Sunny Day, asks that existential question, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Suddenly, that question was the question for me. It's pressing importance, and my life trajectory changed. Within a year, I was here in the Pacific Northwest. Looking back still, also a generation ago, I lost my father and his sister, a dearly beloved aunt. Now, death is part of the life cycle. I know this, I embrace this. Not always easily, but I embrace it. But they both were too young. They both were in their 70s. This year, I will be the same age my father was when he died. For this, another major milestone in life. Yes, they both had physical concerns, but more importantly, they also had spiritual concerns. They had lost enthusiasm for life. Enthusiasm. Now, reading Mary Oliver differently. In her later years, she was not writing about one wild and precious life. Rather, she was writing about loss. Loss of friends, loss of loves, lovers, even loss of joy. Is this what happened to my father, my aunt? Loss of joy? Or another wake-up call? Is my own path to be different? I don't know. I would hope so, but unlike Pike's Peak, the path before me is not clear. There's haze and much uncertainty. I don't know. But the path is made by walking, literally, metaphorically. Yes, I have been hiking other mountains, also taking classes at Portland State, spending time at Forest Park. The path is made by walking. A recent class in music composition really captured my enthusiasm. The final project? Write a string quartet. Hooray! This I did, and it was very, very well received. And I can now take that, write the string quartet, off the bucket list. If you're curious, it was a waltzy tango, and I'm happy to share it. And so I continue to walk. But lastly, what is enthusiasm? The word has Greek roots, en theos, with God. What does that mean to me? What does it mean for you, you? If I may raise the question to you, what is it that captures your enthusiasm? What moves your spirit? Myself, will I run to the string quartet? I don't know. Will I continue to write music? Likely. But the bigger question, will I continue to find things which ignite my enthusiasm? This is my existential quest. My father lived to his 70s, Mary Oliver's to her 80s. Well, I too experienced that loss of joy. I don't know. But this morning, these are the questions I have, and I'm still searching for answers. But with that, today, after church, I will be going out and taking a walk. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Very moving words. Thank you so much. Our final contribution for this portion of today's service is a recording submitted by MA. We'll play that for you all now.
One thing that moves me is being part of a Unitarian Universalist congregation and community. For instance, I sat in online last Saturday with Reverend Dr. Sophia Betancourt for her talk about becoming the next UUA president. This was both a deepening and elevating experience, because here was this queer Afro-Latina woman with substantial decades-long committed roots as a UU practitioner and leader addressing a largely white suburban church audience come to hear what her heart had to say. And my thought was, where will she take us once she's in office? What doors will open? If we're currently discouraged by a national decline in our numbers, is there another rising arc in our future? And how will we practice differently together as a result? I suspect it will not necessarily be totally familiar, and hope so as well. Not only different by who walks in the room, but what happens there too. How can that be otherwise? If you invite your global relatives into your Sunday morning world, how could they help but bring their own ways of being and be loving? Their celebration of creating sacred space and community. Inspired by that vision, I've been inviting some people I know from beyond the bounds of my usual self-made limitations. A few do indeed come from outside of this country, but others who I wouldn't normally ask for one timid reason or another, I'm now reaching out to anyway, hoping that they'll catch the change in the wind. For as clear as the climate crisis is, more of the same won't do. And several folks have immediately understood and responded open-heartedly. They include individuals I've known for years and some less long. Some close as my skin to me and others more at a comfortable distance. But talk about what I'm moved by. The opportunity to participate in having someone I love embrace and be embraced by a community that was once sweetly in place for them and can be again. I know of no higher gift. I'm honored. You notice that this talk only 4 minutes long, is also a gift of this congregation to me. Having to sit down and write what I care about is such a present to me and others. YEAST is that for me, a caring place where I can practice love. Not always getting it right the first time, but continuing on as I learn more, because that is my spiritual path. Dr. Betancourt's talk was recorded, by the way, and you can watch it yourself on the UUA website.
Thank you, MA. And at this time, we will turn to Ellen to do some music based on what we just heard. Take it away, Ellen. You are still muted, Ellen.
Ellen, you're muted.
She is really taken away by the music. I wonder if there's a way we can unmute her from our end, because she is in the zone, Ellen. Oh, man. Let's see. I'm tempted to knock, Ellen.
Can you call her?
Well, she's busy.
I know she's busy, but we'd
I'll
like to
play something of Ellen's that I was inspired to hear, and we'll just go with that. How about that?
All right. Thank you, Yolanda. Okay.